I'm Jason Mitchell, head of responsible investment research at Man Group. You're listening to A Sustainable Future, a podcast about what we're doing today to build a more sustainable world tomorrow. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast, and I hope everyone is staying well. Among the many, many polarizing subjects in the realm of sustainability, carbon dioxide removal, or CDR technology, has to list as one of the most polarizing. Critics cite cost, energy consumption, and the fact that most technologies aren't scalable, let alone proven. But that's not entirely true. CDR covers a whole range of different approaches, from nature-based to engineered. And I guess for context, the IPCC estimates that an astonishing 5 to 16 gigatons of CO2 will need to be removed from the atmosphere annually by 2050. So the public and private sector investment over the last several years shouldn't really come as much of a surprise. Companies like Alphabet, Meta, Stripe, and McKinsey launched the Frontier Fund, a $1 billion effort to grow the market for CDR offsets. Elon Musk sponsors a $100 million XPRIZE for a CDR solution. And last month, the U.S. Department of Energy also announced $100 million of funding for CDR technologies through its Carbon Negative Shots pilot. The point is this: there is a lot going on in the CDR space, which brings me to Microsoft. There are a few companies I watch who I feel are taking the high-quality carbon removal credit space seriously. In fact, Microsoft has gone so far as to target carbon negative by 2030. So when Microsoft announced a six-year offtake agreement with a small Swiss startup called Neustark, I took notice. So it's great to have Lisa Brauner from Neustark on the podcast. We talk about what the world's largest waste stream, demolition concrete, means as a carbon sink, how the private sector and governments are working to support and embed CDR technologies, and why CDR certification is so important in the wake of the recent carbon offset scrutiny. Lisa Brauner is head of carbon dioxide removal at Neustark. She oversees the certification of Neustark's climate projects according to recognized standards, as well as the sales of CDR certificates. Neustark has developed a process of mineralization that permanently stores CO2 in concrete, which can be used today. It's a measurable and verifiable method that can be packaged into carbon credits and bought by companies. These credits provide a transparent, measurable, and results-based means for companies to reduce their carbon footprint. It's great to have you here today, and thank you for taking the time.
Hi, Jason. I'm very much looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Thank you. So, Lisa, I want to start with establishing some baseline knowledge. So, per the Neustark process, carbon dioxide, CO2, is permanently stored in demolition concrete using a natural mineralization technology. It's essentially one of the few technologies that warrants carbon removal with a permanence of thousands to, call it, millions of years. So how does this technology work in practice? And how do you ensure carbon is permanently locked up?
Mm-hmm. So as you said, Neustark is storing biogenic CO2, I would say, not only in demolition concrete, but also in other mineral waste streams. And to do that, we are partnering up with mineral waste recyclers on one side, and then on the other side, also with biogenic CO2 sources, such as biomethane facilities, for example. Neustark takes care of the entire value chain. So really from sourcing the CO2, transporting, but then also storing it at the concrete recyclers. So we are providing the technology to store it in the mineral waste streams. And the technology itself is quite simple. And I would say this is also the beauty of it. So if you want, it's a box where the mineral waste is put in, and then the box is closed and we inject biogenic CO2 into the box. We have gas flow meters that measure how much CO2 enters the box and then leaves the box. And this allows us, of course, to very precisely measure how much CO2 is taken up.
That's great, actually. I've got some follow-up questions. What does a closed system technology that enables precise measurement of stored CO2 in concrete actually mean? And can you talk about how the CO2 is measured? And I guess as a third, and when Neustark
talks about the fact that mineralization and demolished concrete is both commercially and ecologically viable. How do you actually measure the ecological viability of the technology?
Mm-hmm. So the whole measurement, reporting, and verification, we call it in the industry MRV, is a very, very important topic for the credibility of CO2 certificates. So in the end, corporates or private people as well that buy a CO2 certificate, they really want to be sure that this 1 ton of CO2 was really reduced or removed. And of course, we have a broad variety of different solutions to achieve CO2 reduction and removal. And with some of them, it's very straightforward on how to measure the climate impact. And with others, it's much more complicated. So with some of the solutions, you are basing the measurement of the climate impact on many different assumptions, whereas for others, like the one from Neustark, you can measure it straightforward. So as I said, we are operating in this closed system, so we can measure with gas flow meters that are super precise how much CO2 enters the system and exits the system. And then additionally, we also have to measure what are the emissions that arise along our value chain. So for liquefying the CO2, transporting it, but also storing it. So what are the emissions that arise due to this energy consumption that we have? We account for all these emissions. We subtract them from the amount of CO2 stored, and only really the net climate impact is then sold to buyers as CDR certificates.
That's super interesting. So many people are familiar with carbon capture, but I guess for context, why is the limestone concrete process so important and effective? CO2, in my mind, is a molecule that doesn't really react with much, which makes it kind of difficult to capture. Biologically speaking, CO2 binds with proteins. But what does that mean on an industrial basis? You know, there's this idea that, at least with regard to CCS, there's really no free lunch when it comes to CO2.
So CO2 can be stored in different kind of ways. So either it can be stored in different geological formation, either in depleted oil and gas fields, or also by injecting it into a geological formation that has a mineral, such as in Iceland, with basalt that reacts very good with CO2. And additionally to this geological storage solution, mineral waste streams can offer a very secure way of storing the CO2. And this is also a bit the story of why Neustark was founded. Our two co-founders saw this huge waste stream. So demolition concrete is worldwide the biggest waste stream, and thought, why are we not using this giant waste stream as a durable or permanent storage medium for CO2? Because the cement in the demolition concrete reacts very easily with the CO2.
Yeah, maybe for context, it's actually worth, because I've heard you speak about sort of the scale of annual production or byproduct of demolition concrete, something like 1 billion tons. Can you talk a little bit more about the opportunity?
So today, approximately 1 to 2 billion tons of waste concrete are produced every year, globally speaking. And this waste stream is expected to grow significantly in the upcoming years. Reason for that is that after the Second World War, we started building much more with concrete. And so if we assume that these buildings have a lifetime of 50 to 100 years, it is expected that the amount of waste concrete will double every 10 years.
So CCUS, or carbon capture utilization storage, is obviously a little bit different from CCS, or carbon capture storage, in that it has the added process of using the carbon which it captures. So first, how widely used is this in industrial processes like concrete, plastics, or biofuels? And I guess second, I understand that decarbonization means many different things and different technologies, but does a tension exist between CCUS and CCS in terms of capturing clients, funders, or even policymakers' attention?
So I think we have to distinguish here between CCUS, CCS, and then additionally also CCU. So Most of the plastics or biofuels that come out of CCU processes are rather, as I said, CCU than CCUS, meaning that if at the end of life of this product, so for example, if the plastic after 10 years is thrown away, the CO2 that is stored in it will be re-emitted. And so also for fuels that are based on CO2, as soon as you burn the fuel, the CO2 will be re-emitted. So it's really no form of CO2 storage. CCUS is possible, for the example with concrete, because when you store CO2 in waste concrete or also concrete, this storage medium has the same durability as geological storage. So we are talking here again of several thousands to million years that the CO2 can be stored. And it's just an additional storage medium to CCS. I think it's also important to mention the difference between CDR and CCS. So usually when we talk about CCS, we are talking about fossil-based point sources or geogenic-based point sources, giving you examples such as cement facilities or steel facilities. Whereas when we talk about CDR or carbon dioxide removal, we are always talking about capturing CO2 either directly or indirectly from the atmosphere. So if the CO2 is captured as a biogenic CO2 source, this will be CDR and not CCS.
Yeah, those are really important and helpful distinctions. I guess I kind of wanted to turn to a recent announcement. So Neustark announced a partnership with Microsoft to deliver 27,600 tons of carbon removal credits over the course of 6 years to support Microsoft's commitment of becoming carbon negative by 2030. You know, in my mind, Microsoft has an interesting reputation of pursuing specifically high quality credits or offsets. You know, in fact, I remember hearing that around, it might have been 2019 or 2020, Microsoft essentially went out and bought 1.3 million tons of the 1.5 million tons of high quality credits within the market. And I guess I'm trying to understand what the implications of this mean for Neustark. And is Microsoft, in your mind, in Neustark's mind, an outlier, or do you see other companies pursuing this type of objective?
I would say the deal with Microsoft was, of course, a big, big accelerator for us. As you mentioned, Microsoft is perceived as a very credible buyer in the CDR market. They have a very, very good understanding of the CDR market, of the different technologies. They are really a pioneer in this field. And so having Microsoft as one of your buyers is, of course, some sort of one part of the due diligence process that many companies run through when they buy CDR. It just really gives us credibility. And of course, we can also benefit from Microsoft brand, which is really, really amazing. On one side, together, CDR certificate buyers. But then on the other side, of course, also to convince investors to partner up with us. So this was definitely an accelerator. I would say Microsoft is still, and you can also see that if you go, for example, to CDR.fyi that tracks all CDR purchases that have been conducted so far, you can see that Microsoft is still clearly the front runner in the field. Also because they have shot such ambitious net zero targets. However, we see that there are more and more companies that also incorporate CDR in their net zero targets. Obviously, also, if you look, for example, at the Science Based Target Initiative, which is the biggest voluntary initiative for science-based net zero targets of companies, also there it's clearly stated that companies should reduce by 90% their emissions and the remaining 10% should be neutralized by carbon dioxide removal. So essentially, every company that has a net zero claim will sooner or later need to procure CDR. And we see that more and more companies are doing that, and also more and more companies are doing that in a very big manner. So besides Microsoft, there are players such as JP Morgan, for example, that perceived or performed very large CDR deals in the last years.
Yeah, and absolutely. Congratulations on the Microsoft deal. So Neustark set a target to remove 1 million tons of CO2 by 2030. Can you give us some context for the scale of this? I guess I'm thinking about the State of Carbon Dioxide Removal Report, which notes that only 0.1% of CO2 removal is currently from novel CDR methods, while 99.9% comes from conventional management of land, essentially, I guess, impermanent nature-based solutions.
The industry is definitely still very nascent. I think the science is clear. We will need large amount of carbon dioxide removal based on an IPCC report. We expect that we will need approximately between 6 to 10 billion tons of carbon dioxide removal by 2050. So really large amounts. So putting that into perspective, of course, these 1 million tons are still only a drop in the ocean. However, we will not stop there. This is our 2030 target. And obviously, we will ramp up this capacity to several hundred millions of tons by 2050. But it's clear there is not the one solution that will deliver these 6 to 10 billion tons, but instead we will need a broad variety of different solutions to achieve these ambitious targets. And again, the industry is very nascent and we need a lot of support, be it from the public sector, from buyers, to ramp up this industry such that we then have this capacity by 2050. Mm.
Neustark has 14 CO2 storage plants in operation and is expanding with the development of new storage facilities, specifically in Austria and Germany and other countries that are unannounced. Can you talk about how feasible it'll be to scale up this complex technology?
So these 14 CO2 capture and storage sites that we have already in operation have a total CO2 storage capacity of approximately 5,000 tons of CDR per year. That being said, we are only at the very beginning. So this is still only our second year of commercialization phase or rolling out our technology. And already today, we have 14 CO2 capture and storage sites in operation. And additionally to that, we have 30 more capture and storage sites, which are already contracted and which will go into operation in various countries across Europe in the upcoming months. So we will be present in 6 European countries somewhere mid this year.
Is there any view in terms of kind of the run rate of capacity by the end of, let's say, 2024, 2025?
By 2024, we want to have a CDR capacity somewhere between 6 to 10,000 tons of CDR. And then 2025, this should be, of course, increased immensely. So the target there is somewhere between 25,000 to 30,000 tons of CDR. So ramping up the capacity every year to then essentially achieve this 1 million ton target by 2030.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really is ramping up. I kind of want to talk about government support, which seems to be increasing for CDR. I'm based in London, but I'm thinking in December 2023, the UK government set out the CCUS vision, which aims to create a kind of a competitive carbon capture utilization storage market by 2035. The UK government's talked about a £20 billion investment into the market and an aim to add £5 billion to the UK economy by 2050. Kind of, if you pull out, what will be the biggest challenges you think we face in the process of expanding the CCS market? Is it space for carbon capture plants? Is it a competent, trained workforce? Is it continued financing or investments?
I mean, I can only speak for us what we are perceiving as biggest challenges to achieve this ambitious scale-up plan that we have. And I would say I can break it down to 3 main key success factors. On one side, it's definitely investment that you also mentioned yourself. So we need external investment, both private but also public, to help scale at speed. Then on the other side, we also need strategic partnerships, such as the one that we have with Holcim. I mean, Holcim is one of the biggest construction manufacturing companies in the world, and such as strategic partnerships helps us immensely in the rollout of our technology. And with that, it comes also along about the second factor that I see, which is the storage capacity. So as I mentioned, we are partnering up with mineral waste recyclers, and we have to incentivize them so that they partner up with us together. I can then later on go a bit more into detail how we do that. But we really need the construction industry to be open-minded and also seize the opportunity to partner up with us, because together we can then really make a measurable impact. And then the last thing is, of course, people. At the end, those two challenges and many more can only be addressed by working with the best people, and if we get to fully utilize this potential.
Allied Offsets reports a total of $4.3 billion invested in CDR across 90 investments and $1.7 billion in 2023 alone. The increasing trend in investment is contrary to the overall decline in climate tech investment in 2023, unfortunately. However, despite this, CDR only consists of 5.3% of all climate tech investments. I guess to the point that we just talked about, what are the gating factors here in terms of driving more investment? To what extent do you see private sector capital driving the expansion of this technology versus government funding? And sort of last, where will the majority of future funding come from?
So the CDR industry, again, is still very nascent, and it has experienced significant growth only in the past 2 years. And this growth was primarily driven by the voluntary carbon market. So companies, corporates buying carbon dioxide removal certificates voluntarily for their net zero targets. And since we are currently ourselves in a funding round, we can talk from our experience. So what we see is that some investors still express skepticism regarding the stability of this voluntary carbon market. And since the CDR market is up until today essentially relying on this market, they are also expressing skepticism about the growth trajectory of the CDR market. I think what we do is we are taking a macro perspective of this. And as the scientific consensus is clear that we need 6 to 10 gigatons of CDR to achieve our 2050 net zero target as a world. So if the world is really serious about achieving our climate objective, it's clear that we need to fund these technologies in different ways. I would say there will still need funding from the private sector, but then also from the public sector. And this is a change that we are seeing not only in UK, but also in other countries. So, for example, the procurement programs of the US and also of Switzerland, by the way, or also the carbon removal certification framework that is currently established in the EU. So the focus is more and more on this industry, and I'm very optimistic that there will be funding to support really the growth of this industry.
Mm. Neustark's methodology for tech-based carbon removal represents the first gold standard CDR approval. There's obviously been significant attention, and I'd even say scrutiny, to the carbon credit verification kind of area, given the criticism that players like Verra have received. How important is it to have effective frameworks and certification to ensure CO2 removal is obviously high quality and reliable, rewards decarbonization and helps scale up the technology? And I guess also, how does certification help to increase investment into Neustark?
I would say it's very, very important to really ensure transparency and credibility of the CO2 certificates. This is also why Neustark started or decided very early on in the process. It was in 2021 where we decided that we will establish a methodology on the gold standard. And for such a young company, this was really a big decision, because you need a lot of resources to establish such a methodology. And this is why we are also very proud that we were the first and are still the only carbon dioxide or tech carbon dioxide removal provider that has a methodology on the gold standard. I think currently the voluntary carbon market is very unregulated. So you will find various different methodologies to quantify the climate impact of different climate projects. And I think we really have to go into a standardization. So a standardized way of really assessing the quality of a certificate, be it a CO2 reduction certificate or a carbon dioxide removal certificate. And this is also why this carbon dioxide removal certification framework of the European Union is so important, that we have a standardized way of quantifying the climate impact of carbon dioxide removals within Europe.
I'm wondering, is it accurate to say that companies who buy carbon credits with Neustark are offsetting their own carbon emissions through funding the technology implementation of the biogas companies? If it is, in the end, look, there are still the emissions being produced by the purchasing company, which aren't really accounted for. So to what extent is it the responsibility of the biogas companies and concrete recycling companies to offset their own emissions? Maybe it's a semantic thing, but how can we call this carbon negative when the process is removing carbon before it reaches the atmosphere rather than removing carbon already in the atmosphere?
I see different questions within this one. I will start with the last one that you had. Why is it called carbon negative? And there, it's very important that we look at the source of the CO2. So is it geogenic or fossil, or is it biogenic? And in our case, we use only biogenic CO2. So the CO2 was originally captured from the atmosphere by photosynthesis from plants. And we are now storing this CO2 durably for thousands of years in mineral waste stream. And this is why we are talking about carbon negative emissions. To your first questions, sooner or later, every company will need, be it a biogas facility, a concrete producer, concrete recycler, or a big corporate, every company will need to have net zero targets and also to achieve these net zero targets. Currently, we see that the CDR industry is mainly supported by companies in the tech and finance industry that want to position themselves as pioneers and really want to take their net zero commitment seriously. So currently, we have collaboration agreements with the concrete recycler and also with the biogenic CO2 sources that we are partnering with, that the carbon dioxide removals that are produced from this process belong to Neustark, so that we can sell it then to companies such as Microsoft. And like this, we can avoid any kind of double counting, so that not the biogas facility or the concrete recycler are accounting for the CDR certificate, but that it really belongs to Microsoft and that they can claim this certificate for themselves.
Yeah, thanks for helpfully disaggregating that question of mine. And maybe I got a little bit too ahead of myself, but I guess to come back a little bit, I mean, Neustark's process depends on biogas production as a source of CO2. And I'm wondering, just to start off, what are the risks around this? And how does Neustark manage them? Which aspects of the technology can be utilized in processes other than biogas production?
Today, we are partnering up only with already existing biomethane facilities. So biomethane facilities that were before Neustark just emitting the biogenic CO2 into the atmosphere as a waste flow. By capturing now this CO2 waste stream and storing it in concrete, we can very effectively and with very low energy demand create negative emissions. Of course, with biogenic CO2 sources, you always have to make sure that the biomass is sourced sustainably. So the sources that we are operating today, they are only using biogenic waste stream for the production of biomethane. Our process can work with any kind of CO2 molecule. So in the future, of course, we can also start storing fossil CO2, or also CO2 captured directly from the atmosphere through direct air capture. So any of this is possible. Just now, to start with our process, we saw it's the easiest way to partner up with biomethane facilities where the CO2 is available in a very high concentration and we only need to liquefy it and then store it.
What about China? Obviously, China is the largest producer of biogas with, I think, over 100,000 biogas plants, obviously followed by Germany with more than 10,000 plants. But with regard to China, are there any plans to expand into China? And how can the operation in such a complex technology be scaled up there?
I would say not in the near term. So how we are deciding of where we want to expand, it's mainly based on the amount of waste concrete that we are seeing in different countries. And we see that there is a large amount in Europe, and then there is a further large amount in North America. So for the next 1 to 3 years, we are mainly focusing on expanding our operation within Europe and then also within North America. That being said, I don't know, maybe in 5 years, we will then also go more and more to China and other countries in Asia.
To what extent do we need to focus on reducing carbon emissions alongside carbon removal? To go back to that state of carbon dioxide removal report, it suggests that the gap between proposed levels of carbon dioxide removal and what is needed to meet the Paris temperature goal will also require a reduction in carbon emissions. What role do you see Neustark having in educating, I guess more generally, about the reduction in emissions even beyond carbon removal?
Well, as a leading player in the nascent and fast-growing CDR scene, we are definitely seeing a responsibility in educating industry players. So we are really putting a lot of effort in educating, be it in direct conversation with potential buyers, but then also through our LinkedIn channel, for example. For us, it's very important that we always highlight that CDR should not be used instead of CO2 reduction. First and foremost, we have to reduce our emissions to the max. Every company should first and foremost reduce their emission to the max. And only the rest, so again, referring to Science-Based Targets Initiative, the rest would be then the remaining 10% should be removed with qualitatively high carbon dioxide removal from the atmosphere.
You've talked in the past a little bit about sort of the importance of partnering with construction companies, but how are the companies Neustark partners with involved in this actual process? And what I mean is that biogas plants partner with Neustark, allowing them to capture the CO2 from their operations. But to what extent do the biogas companies themselves invest in the technology or at least fund the development of the infrastructure for it to take place? Does the concrete recycling plant, for instance, invest in the technology?
So we see two cases today that we have, focusing first on the biogenic CO2 source. What we have to put in place there is a liquefaction facility. This liquefaction facility can either be funded by Neustark or then by the biogenic CO2 sources. And today we see really two cases. Some of the CO2 sources want to buy the liquefaction facility themselves. In that case, we then buy the liquid CO2 from the biogenic CO2 sources. And others prefer that Neustark is financing the liquefaction facility. On the CO2 sink side or the minimal waste recycler side, our business model works today as follows, that we are selling the storage facility to the concrete recycler, and we are then paying a reimbursement fee for each ton of CO2 that they are storing. And this incentivizes the concrete recycler to store as much CO2 as possible. And on the other side, he can then also pay back the capital costs of this storage facility. And once he has paid back the plant, every money that comes in is an additional business case for them.
I want to finish with two perhaps more technical questions. Neustark talks about its work examining other related paths of storing CO2, for example, in concrete residual water or concrete slurry and other waste materials. Can you talk about how that's progressing? How much more effective could it be in storing CO2?
Essentially, any kind of mineral waste stream can store CO2. And our main focus will remain on demolition concrete because this is just worldwide the biggest waste stream. However, there are other sink materials, we call them, that can store significant amount of CO2. So one of them is, for example, slags and ashes, so residues after a burning process. For example, residues from a wastewater incineration plant or a steel manufacturing facility. And we have already first partners contracted where the operation at these slags facility will start in this year. Additionally to slags and ashes, we are also looking at slurry at concrete producers. What are slurries? So when a concrete mixing truck comes back from a manufacturing site, the concrete mixing truck often still contains concrete, and this is then washed out, and the slurry is then held in a big reservoir. And this slurry, since it's also containing cement, can store also significant amount of CO2. So we have also first projects running under this case, a storage case. And all of these mineral waste streams will help us to achieve even better our ambitious carbon dioxide removal targets.
Got it. And I guess the final question is, what are the industry benchmarks and where are the constraints in terms of minimizing gray emissions? What's necessary to drive gray emissions sustainably below that 10% level? Is it a technological problem or an economies of scale issue?
If we look at the life cycle assessment of our entire value chain, and with value chain, I mean from liquefying the CO2, transporting the CO2 to storing the CO2, we see that the liquefaction plant is the step in the value chain that emits the most CO2 equivalent. And this is just simply based on its high electricity consumption. So essentially, the carbon footprint of the electricity source for this liquefaction plant matters a lot. Under the gold standard methodology, we are using the country mix of the site where the liquefaction facility is operating. So in Switzerland, we have a very good carbon footprint of the electricity mix, meaning that the emissions are lower there. In Germany, they are higher, since in Germany, there's still more coal power based electricity. However, as the economy gets greener and as we move more and more away from fossil electricity sources, the overall carbon footprint of the liquefaction facility gets better, of course. And then additionally, of course, the transportation of the CO2 is also an emission factor in our value chain. But there I see a very big competitive advantage to, for example, geological storage sites. So what we really see is that our solution is a great alternative to geological storage for all the CO2 sources that are located far away from geological storage sites. Because for them, we can minimize the transportation, which minimizes the emissions of transportation, but then, of course, also the costs of transportation.
Understand. Well, thanks. So it's been fascinating to discuss what carbon dioxide removal, or CDR, represents in the effort to strengthen climate mitigation, how the private sector and governments are working to support and embed CDR technologies, and why CDR certification is so important in the wake of the recent carbon offset scrutiny. So I'd really like to thank you for your time and insights. I'm Jason Mitchell, Head of Responsible Investment Research at Man Group, here today with Lisa Braune, Head of Carbon Dioxide Removal at Neustart. Many thanks for joining us on A Sustainable Future, and I hope you'll join us on our next podcast episode. Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason.
I'm Jason Mitchell. Thanks for joining us. Special thanks to our guests and, of course, everyone that helped produce this show. To check out more episodes of this podcast, please visit us at man.com/RI-podcast.